The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier and Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, hello and welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition for this week. We're recording live today from an absolutely beautiful spring day in Colorado. It's going to be a gorgeous weekend, which means it's time for me to break out the mower, give my lawn the first mow of the year. It's getting a little scraggly in places, but I'll get that all prepared just in time for us to have another couple of snows that are going to come. So typical Colorado, at least I hope, we need some more snow and just liquid in general over the next month or so before we start getting warmed up and move towards summertime. But this weekend should be absolutely gorgeous. I'm sure Jim's got big plans for outdoors. He's got to be doing a lot of digging and scraping and filthy stuff in his garden.
Is that the handoff?
I just have to mow my lawn. So, yeah, do you have big plans in the garden this weekend, I assume?
I'm going to go on I don't really call it a hike because it's just within Boulder. This is a group I belong to. The woman who runs it wrote a book on urban hikes in Boulder.
Are those called walks?
That's what I'm saying. It's a mix of pavement and blacktop and, you know, Boulder is just peppered with all the open space. Mm-hmm. So it's a mix of both. But I don't really consider it hiking at all. I consider it more walking. Although there are some sections, a lot of hills in Boulder, so we can get a hill workout in. Anyways, I'm walking with that group tomorrow. There's like 60 people, so I like it when it's a big group and you're walking through the city. A lot of people to talk to. So easy, only 7 miles. So I'll do that in the morning.
It sounds more like a parade. 60 people sounds like a parade.
I know, 60 people walking in a line. So anyways, I'm going to do that in the morning on Saturday. And then, yeah, probably come back and start get definite gardening. It's I'm knee deep in it, and no pun intended. And Sunday, I have my gardening partner Tina and her husband Richard coming over, and we'll be doing more. So yeah, definitely getting everything going in the garden, and we'll go from there. And I have this new doctor. I have that concierge medical service. Mm-hmm. Used to be MDVIP. I'll say it now. And I don't like them anymore. I actually like them, but I hate them at the same time. My doctor retired, and they have had a hell of a time finding a suitable replacement in Fort Collins. And they finally threw in the towel after two doctors came and went very quickly. And I got a very terse letter from them that I had 30 days to get my medical records and find a new doctor. So I was not pleased. I called them up, got into a Boston Jim was on display for sure. And anyways, I found a new doctor. So I Googled around and I want concierge. So I finally found a concierge service and doctor. And I went and interviewed him down in Erie, folks. And the reason what won him over, before I even talked to him, I'm like, this is my doctor. So on his website, you see all his medical stuff. And okay, very nice. But there was about the doctor section, and I read it. the guy hunts, fishes, and grows vegetables. I was like, this doctor was made for me. So I went, interviewed him, and it's funny because he says, well, how did you find me? And I explained to him what happened with MDVIP, and I wanted a concierge doctor, and, you know, your fee was reasonable, and I like the added attention and the lengthy visits and all that stuff I like about concierge. And he says, and what about my background did you like? I'm like, you hunt, you fish, and you garden. I said, these are my three hobbies as well. So we were just made for each other. So anyways, I went in there today to review my medical records, bring them up to date, you know, between my ablations and stroke and what do I have? AFib. And it was a long meeting. But I swear, Chris, half the meeting was talking about hunting and gardening. And I'm thinking, Doc, come on, let's get more to the task at hand. Okay, great. You have some asparagus coming in. Let's talk about my stroke. So it was kind of cute, but it was a much longer meeting than I thought because of all the talk we did on gardening and hunting. But I really feel, and I'm certainly not giving a shout out to concierge service. Some people refuse to pay their doctor to essentially keep a limited number of patients. But it truly is wonderful to go to an office and not be rushed out, to have lengthy meetings, to be able to sit there with your healthcare provider and bring them up to date on everything. He said my medical records got transferred over 502 pages. I was like, well, that makes sense with everything that I've been through. So anyways, that's what I did this morning. And I guess I got on the subject of it because we're talking about gardening and he's knee deep into his gardening as well.
Nice.
So anyways, just figured I'd throw that out. And in the middle of his conversation, he lost his train of thought. And I thought, this is perfect. He's my age too. He's 60. I thought, this is great, Doc. Don't worry. Because he was like, oh my God, I lost my train of thought. I said, Doc, that's okay. That happens to me all the time. So I feel better. It's because we're 60. It's okay.
Huh.
Huh. What are you talking about?
I don't know.
Huh?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe go to somebody who
doesn't lose his train of thought.
Fill in the holes that you have. You know, they're there as a compliment rather than a parallel.
No, I think you should have I like the idea of a physician who relates to me and we share something in common. That's the only thing we share in common. He and I don't look anything alike. We don't live in the same town. We're not talking about going out and hanging together. But it's just kind of funny. As I was researching physicians, what kind of won me over was his passions of hunting, fishing, and gardening, which longtime listeners will know is the three things I love doing.
I hope it works out for you. It's too bad the other
one. I hope so, too, because I'm getting fed up with changing doctors.
Mm-hmm.
But concierge service, I do like it. I think it's worth the money. I'm not quite sold on direct primary care, DPC, which is kind of the kissing cousin of concierge. But I do like concierge. Okay. Anyways, enough of that. Back to the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the Q&A show, folks. I want to begin by thanking everybody who sent suggestions. We got quite a few suggestions, Chris, of ways to make it different and better. Some liked it the way it is. I will say it's kind of a toss-up based on the emails I've been getting. And if you sent me an email, just I can't reply to every single one saying thank you, thank you. So I'm just giving this general thank you. But I did get your email, and I do have them saved. I think it's about 50-50 on the dedicated Q&A show as opposed to what we do now with multiple questions. And it's falling right in the line that I thought, folks. Mm-hmm. The people who feel the dedicated doesn't apply to them, they're missing out on a whole show. But the people who like the idea of a dedicated Q&A, they said they listened to the entire question, whether it applies to them or not. And they, for some reason, just like the idea of kind of a deep dive series of questions in one topic. So I'm torn on what we're going to do. It might be a mixture of both that we kind of throw in there. But some people, one person in particular, sent 10 suggestions, which weren't so much for Q&A, but some of her suggestions, I forget if it's a man or a woman who wrote that email, would make wonderful EDU shows. And I thought, wow, some good suggestions of potential shows. There was quite a few email requests for more guests. Can you bring specials on? Bring the tax person back. Bring Pete back. Several people wanted me to get Pete to come back. I doubt seriously I could get Pete to come back. He's in the middle of his own retirement. And I also know him personally, and I think he would be very remiss as no longer a practicing attorney to come on and answer estate planning questions. I don't think he would agree to that at all. So I don't think we're going to get Pete on, but I am actively trying to bring an estate planning attorney on. I have one, possibly two, who have expressed interest in the past, but we've just never got on the same page of when to be able to get them on. So it's kind of been falling through in that realm. But I do hope to get an estate planning attorney on because I do feel Pete added a lot of value in the past for sure. There's been several requests for Medicare experts to come on. And that's a tough one because most Medicare quote-unquote experts are nothing more than insurance agents. And I'm not throwing insurance agents under the bus here. You have to go to an insurance agent to get a Medigap or a Medicare Advantage plan because those are insurance policies, if you will, that supplement Medicare. But most are insurance agents who are more schooled on how those policies work and selling them, as opposed to someone who's truly open and knowledgeable on Medicare. I did bump into once many years ago the SHIP, SHIP, the SHIP rep in Larimer County. And I don't even know if he is still working, but he did express interest in coming on the podcast and answering Medicare questions. I forget what SHIP stands for. Chris will Google it and tell us, but it is a byproduct of Obamacare. We've talked about this in the past. Every county in the nation will have a SHIP office or rep who is trained in Medicare. They don't sell Medicare policies. They're paid by the government to learn Medicare and make themselves available to answer questions for free. So I think I'm going to try to find the Larimer County one again, maybe even the Boulder County one, since I'm only a mile from Boulder County, and maybe I can get one of them to agree to come on. If you are listening to this and you are a SHIP trained rep and you'd like to come on and answer Medicare questions, please reach out to me. Love to bring you on. We would love to have someone come on, but I want someone who's not incentivized to sell insurance. I want somebody to come on who is being compensated already to provide education to people. So trust me, I'd love to get a knowledgeable Medicare person on. So maybe that shout out to SHIP people, if you're listening, definitely don't hesitate. Chris and I, and Chris will explain to you how to do it. I don't know, you're going to call in and whatever, and he can get you on the show. You don't have to come to Colorado. But it would be great if we could get a Medicare person on. And again, estate planning attorneys was a big one. Greg coming back on for long-term care discussions. So I will chat with Greg to see if he will be interested in that. He's not overly excited, I don't think, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, Greg. I know you listen to the podcast. I don't know if he actually likes coming on the show, but if he does and he's willing to do it, we'll bring Greg on again to answer LTC questions. So that's kind of the general thoughts, Chris.
Hey, just so you know, looks like the SHIP representative in Larimer County is connected to Aspen Club. And I think you've already got connections there, so.
Yeah, I used to be very, very involved with the Aspen Club. That's kind of falling through the wayside. But yeah, I used to be very involved with the Aspen Club. So I'll try reaching out to the SHIP rep here locally. And then maybe there's one, or if you're listening to this and you know the SHIP rep or have met them, feel free to talk to one. But if I can find a SHIP representative, whether it's local in Colorado or anywhere in the United States, who will come on and answer Medicare questions and also just talk about Medicare. We can feature them on an EDU show and we can feature them on Q&A shows. I would be all over that. So let's keep our fingers crossed collectively, folks, that we can find a ship.
And SHIP stands for State Health Insurance Assistance Plan or Program.
That should be SHAP, not SHIP. I'm sorry.
Well, SHIAP. But
SHIAP. It's like GM helps, right. H-E-A-L-P-S with that guy. Helps is spelled H-E-A-L-P-S. Longtime listeners will know exactly what I was joking about there, but true story, somebody spelled helps, H-E-A-L-P-S. Because people sometimes wonder why Chris and I spell it out. That's Jim at jimhelps, H-E-L-P-S.com. That's how I always say my email, because helps is not spelled H-E-A-L-P-S. Okay, anyways, for all of those, and there were two of you who wanted me to bring Pete back, that ain't going to happen. For everybody else with ideas of guests, I'm very receptive to that, and we will try to find someone. And I do know the three taxateers, Paul, don't tell me the names, Paul, Alan, and Steve, nailed it. Paul, Alan, and Steve are interested in coming on, so we will definitely. And I think Paul said he might come on in a week, right? I think so. He's going to let us know.
Yeah, once tax prep's over. Got a few more days.
Tax prep's over. He's got some things going on that he's busy with, but he might try to be on next week's show, answering more tax questions. So again, the only other change, if you send questions in, please, in the subject line, try to indicate what the topic is so I can put them in the correct folders. And when we start bringing guests on, or when we want to do a dedicated show to topics, I have them already there. Okay, let's jump into the rest of the Q&As. So, Chris, we do have Irma, because I had mentioned we were running short on Irma questions, and lo and behold, we got a bunch of Irma questions in. So, great. Do you want to lead with Irma or Social Security? And since we are trying to spice up the show, do you want to let our listeners know, are you broadcasting topless again today?
Not yet, but that could change.
Certainly, if we want to spice up the show and add some excitement.
We'll see how the first question goes. If it's not spicy enough, that's where we'll head.
That's okay. Do you want Irma first or Social Security first?
I feel awkward doing Irma first, so let's do Social Security first.
Okay. All righty, first question. Oh, I loved his. He gives three hints: hard, medium, and easy. Okay. So I'm going to. I didn't get it until the third hint. And I was like, oh, that's easy. Okay. So, hello, Jim and Chris. Enjoy your podcast. Longtime listener, looking forward to them every week. I am, as you say, a do-it-yourselfer VGer. And for those who don't know, VGer is a Vanguard engineer. It's just you do-it-yourself investors who have an engineer-style mind. I call them VGs. Okay, here's his trivia, Chris. He comes from the state. Hint number one, the hardest hint. It has hosted the world's largest three-on-three basketball. Or it hosts, not past tense, current tense. It hosts the world's largest three-on-three basketball tournament. I didn't even know there was a three-on-three basketball tournament, but this state has the world's largest.
Indiana.
That's what I thought. No. Hint number two, getting a little bit easier. But still, to me, you'd have to really be a fan of this cartoon. He says Gary Larson, the creator of The Far Side, was born and raised in this state.
I love that. I love The Far Side. I haven't read it in a while, but Iowa.
You get a 1 out of 49 chance.
Iowa. Huh? Iowa.
Iowa? Nope. Okay, everybody who played along, no more of the states listed per a recommendation from a client, a listener. So you can be playing along with this. Everybody's going to guess now. I guarantee it. Ready for the third one? Mm-hmm. Starbucks and Amazon were founded in this state.
Oh. Well, that does it, right? That's Washington.
Washington, yep.
That didn't even come to my mind with the first two questions.
No, neither would me. Okay. Here's a Social Security question. I am 60 years old. So am I, listener. So welcome to the big 6-0. I worked for 15 years in Canada before I moved to the U.S. and became a U.S. citizen. Well, congratulations, listener. This year will be my 30th year in the United States. As an example, let's say that at age 70, my Social Security will be $3,500. Let's also say my Canadian pension will be $500. Mm-hmm. Is there some sort of cross-border agreement between the United States and Canada when it comes to working and recognizing income from each country? In other words, will my Social Security be reduced because of my earnings in Canada? I believe I read somewhere, though, that if I have 30 years of earnings in the U.S., then there will be no WEP-like reduction to my Social Security or Canadian pension. Thanks in advance. Keep up the great work. I have found your shows very informative and helpful.
Okay, well, there's a bit of good news for me in this whole email that he sent, that the first thing I will address is my get-out-of-jail-free card on this, because we can essentially ignore the whole Canadian connection because of the last part he mentioned, where if you have 30 years of substantial earnings and there's a table at Social Security, you can Google WEP, which is W-E-P, stands for Windfall Elimination Provision, substantial earnings, and you can see the table, and they give you a year-by-year number that if you earn that amount in the Social Security system, it counts as a year of substantial participation. And it is true that WEP completely disappears regardless of your circumstances if you've got 30 years of substantial participation. And that substantial earnings, just to give you an idea of what that might be, in 2024, and I'm pulling this up, there we go. Well, 2023 I have is right about $30,000. So, and to compare, say, 30 years ago, 30 years prior, so 1993, it was only $10,725. So it's a low enough number that if you're working a full-time job, you almost certainly have substantial earnings in the Social Security system. And if when he moved here after working 16 years in Canada, that means he wasn't a youngin' at the time and came in and probably had a decent career job, he's almost certainly got 30 years of substantial earnings, and therefore WEP goes away. And it starts to go away in a phase out starting at 25 years of substantial participation. So that thing that we, and I'm not going to go deep into the basics of WEP because that's not the essence of the question here. The windfall elimination provision can reduce your Social Security benefit if you have, in addition to your Social Security, what we call a non-covered pension, which is a pension from another entity other than Social Security that you did not pay into Social Security while working at that employer. And working in Canada, you know, kind of falls into that category. Now, so in his case, I don't think he needs to worry about Canada or not, because he's got 30 years and no WEP to worry about. If he didn't, though, there are absolutely agreements between lots of countries around the world, and by agreements, I really mean treaties, where the United States has signed a treaty of understanding, or whatever the legal terminology is, so that people who work in both countries who have very different, maybe, pension or Social Security situations in those countries, they will coordinate those benefits together so that those workers are not unfairly penalized for having worked some time in Canada and then here, or in France and then here, and that sort of thing. So hadn't he not worked 30 years, I would have had to say, well, I'm not an expert on the Canada treaty specifically, and I'd have to go look it up for you. But those of you interested, you can absolutely look it up. It's readily available. If you just kind of Google Social Security and then your Social Security treaty and then your country that you're interested in, it'll take you right to the Social Security website, and you'll be able to read the details of that particular treaty with that country and how it coordinates with, for instance, I don't know what it's called in Canada, but in Australia they have the superannuation, I think is what they call their Social Security equivalent over there. And there's a treaty to coordinate that with Social Security and so on and so forth. There's dozens and dozens of these countries where these treaties exist with the United States, and they kind of blend the two systems together, if you will, in a variety of ways, depending on the agreement. But don't think he needs to worry about that in his case, because he's got 30 years. So that's you.
Is that my cue?
That's you, yeah.
Excellent. Okay. Continue with Social Security, or do you want to go with Irma?
Let's go Irma before we go back, if we're going to do two Social Securities.
All righty. Okay. And thank you for the person who sent the Irma question in. Dear Jim and Chris, I'm a longtime listener. Enjoy your show very much, from which I have learned an enormous amount of actionable information. My state hint. I don't think you're going to get it. No, you're not going to get this one. You ready?
Okay.
I live in the state in which the first baseball stadium was built. The first American piano was built, and the first daily newspaper was published.
I'm going to guess New York.
Good guess. No, Pennsylvania, he said. Again, we don't vet these, but apparently Pennsylvania.
Interesting.
Which got me thinking, the first newspaper might have been from colonial times, but I always thought Paul Revere had the first newspaper, but then I started thinking, was it Benjamin Franklin? I don't know. But we don't vet, just his point. Okay, here's his question. My wife and I are about to complete 5 consecutive years of Lodge Roth conversions, right up to the top of the second Irma bracket. We will both turn 73 next year in 2025, and our RMDs will obviously begin. We plan on making our last Lodge Roth conversion this year, prior to the onset of our RMDs. In 2025, when RMDs begin, and when we are no longer making conversions, our modified adjusted gross income will decline below the first Irma bracket. However, the Social Security won't become aware of this reduction in our modified adjusted gross income until 2026, when they have access to our 2025 tax return. Is there a way to let Social Security know, so they will discontinue our Irma surcharges? Social Security Form 44 requires that you must meet 1 of 8 life-changing events. But I don't think discontinuing Roth conversions is not included. Thank you very much, Jorge, or George, from Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. Good question. And Roth conversions, when you make them, are part of your modified adjusted gross income. So since Irma, the income-related monthly adjustment amount, or the Medicare premium surcharge, which is what I tend to call it, is based on your modified adjusted gross income, Roth conversions can absolutely contribute to triggering Irma, which they've been experiencing, and they've consciously been converting Roth to Roth from traditional up to the top of the second Irma tier, by their indications. And those of you unfamiliar with Irma need to know that when you have Irma in effect, it's based on your modified adjusted gross income of 2 tax years previous. So for instance, in 2024, if you're on Medicare, they look at your modified adjusted gross income from 2022 to determine your Medicare premium surcharges for 2024. It's always 2 years behind. So that's why he's talking about his Roth conversions in 2024, the last year they plan to do significant conversions. still continuing to affect his 2025 and 2026 IRMA surcharges, even though he will have stopped doing these Roth conversions. First of all, he is correct. Stopping Roth conversions is not one of the life-changing events that could grant you relief in having Social Security not look back 2 years and instead use a more recent year. So it's going to fail. You know, SSA 44 is not going to help you here. But you've actually already gotten a little help, and I'll tell you why. It is true that the 2024 and actually your 2023 conversions are going to cause you to have IRMA in 2025, the first year you're on Medicare. And then your 2024 conversions sound like they're going to cause IRMA for 2026. And then they'll be gone at that point, because then your 2025 modified adjusted gross income, you said, is going to be below the first IRMA tier. And then you should be free and clear, if you will, from IRMA, unless something changes down the road. But remember back a few years, the first couple of years you did those Roth conversions, you didn't get an immediate IRMA indication. They didn't penalize you immediately. It was 2 years delayed. So you already got your relief, essentially, in those first 2 years where your Roth conversions didn't contribute to your IRMA. Now, you may have had other reasons that caused you to be in IRMA, but it wasn't from those Roth conversions. So that's how you kind of have to look at it. There's no justification, at least in current law, that ceasing these Roth conversions grants you a special dispensation for determining your IRMA. So you're just going to have to bite the bullet and consider the IRMA surcharges in 25 and 26 you're likely to be experiencing as a cost of doing, you know, part of the cost of doing those Roth conversions. So hopefully that was factored into your decision to do them. We always encourage people to look at these kind of side effect taxes, because this is, in our eyes, a tax. It's a payment to the government required because your modified adjusted gross income was too high. That's a tax in my book. So any of these side effect taxes should be considered in your, you know, number crunching for justifying the Roth conversion in the first place. But that's how it's going to work for you, given the facts that you've shared with me so far. If you happen to have a life-changing event in the next year or two, you could then file an SSA 44 and get relief from it, even though the life-changing event might have had nothing to do with the Roth conversions. Completely independent life-changing event. It's the two-pronged test when they grant you relief with an SSA 44 application. Do you have a life-changing event? And secondly, is your modified adjusted gross income more recently less than it was before? And so if you keep track of those life-changing events, if you happen to have one. Now, they're not life-changing events that you want to have happen, because now one of them is a reduction in income from work, so retirement situation. Sounds like you're already retired, though. But the others are things like disability and death and bad stuff that's happened. You lose your house in a disaster. You know, I'm not going to pull up the whole list, but they're not things that you want to have happen to you. Divorce, that's another life-changing event. Or getting married. I guess that one might be a good one. Getting married. Unless you're already married, then that's discouraged. But
all right. I want to apologize. I thought I was muted when I coughed. Did I cough in the middle of your answer?
I didn't notice if you did, but I'll check it.
You might want to go back and check. I thought I was muted. Yeah.
No, I'll look at it afterwards.
Yeah, Chris edits my coughs, folks. Other than that, he leaves all my muff-ups in there. But if I cough, he will generally edit that out. But anyways, I do apologize. I think I coughed in the middle of your answer. I could be wrong, but I think I did.
Well, it'll be gone by the time people hear this.
True. Okay. Let's do a quick Social Security question. Let's get into the new question of the week, an annuity question, and stuff like that. Okay. No hint from this one, but he does live, he says, in the great state of Ohio, where yours truly may someday move. Mm-hmm. He says, I live in Ohio and I have a Social Security survivor benefit question. Let's say a husband dies at age 59. Let's say the wife is also 59 at the time of her husband's death. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the husband was not taking Social Security yet.
Right.
Can the wife collect a survivor benefit equal to 71.5% of the husband's PIA? And for those who don't know, that's primary insurance amount, or the amount the husband would get at his full retirement age. And if he's 59 now, that would have been age 67. Okay, PIA. Can the wife collect a survivor benefit of 70.5% of the husband's PIA when she turns 60? Or does she have to wait until the husband would have been his full retirement age? If she can take the survivor benefit at 60, would she be able to then switch to her own benefit when she reaches her own full retirement age? Thank you very much for clarifying this for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So something we don't talk about a whole lot, what if you pass away before you've even claimed? How does it work? Well, in this case, she becomes eligible for a survivor benefit as young as age 60, or technically as young as age 50 if she's disabled. That wasn't mentioned here, so we'll assume that's not the case. So yes, she has eligibility for a survivor benefit off of his record as young as her turning age 60, where he gets the 71.5% figure that claiming a survivor benefit early as 60, reduces the survivor benefit by 28.5%, leaving you with 71.5%. And it is generally the deceased person's PIA that's the starting point. It's not always, for a variety of reasons beyond our conversation today, but it's generally either identical or really, really close to your PIA. And so, yes, we'll just talk about it as she has, you know, possibility to collect his PIA, but only if she waits to her full retirement age. That's when she'd get 100% of his PIA. He won't have earned any delayed retirement credits because he died at 59. He has to live past his full retirement age to have grown his benefit beyond his PIA. That's obviously not happening. He passed away. Even if she delays past when he would have gone beyond his full retirement age, still doesn't generate the delayed retirement credits. He has to be alive and delay for those to happen. So that's not part of this conversation in his hypothetical. But she absolutely could claim his survivor benefit alone and then later switch. And he said switch to her own benefit. And he said at her full retirement age. But she might want to consider waiting to 70 to claim. And first of all, if her benefit will never be bigger than the 71.5% of his benefit, there's no reason she'd ever switch. So the fact he's asking about switching implies that her benefit is big enough that it's going to be bigger than 71.5% of his benefit. But if that's true, that means it could grow even more by her waiting to 70. And the reason I point that out is there's always a classic trade-off when you delay and earn delayed retirement credits between giving up the benefit you could otherwise receive and then getting a bigger benefit later. And the trade-off is I don't get anything as I wait. In a case like this, she's collecting a benefit while waiting for hers to grow 8% every year. And when I say that 8% every year, that's the size of the benefit. That's not a rate of return of 8. That's very misunderstood out there, both with consumers and with professionals in our industry. They equate delaying Social Security to an 8% return. They are underselling the benefits of an 8% increase in lifetime income by describing it that way. It is much more beneficial than an 8% quote return. So in her case, she might very well want to wait because she's in a better position than a normal person delaying to 70. When I say normal, a typical person who doesn't have access to a survivor benefit is giving up all benefits until they get to 70 to get that bigger benefit. She's able to collect the survivor benefit while delaying. It makes the cost of delaying so much lower, so small, that it's actually usually very, very attractive for her to delay all the way to 70, getting all those delayed retirement credits for herself, and then switch ultimately to hers, then for the rest of her life, collecting that larger benefit. So Just throwing that out there. I don't have any of the exact numbers to say how much difference this would make, but I would say it's far more common when people have access to a survivor benefit they can claim first to wait for their own to get to 70 rather than turning it on at full retirement age, because the cost of gaining those delayed retirement credits is so greatly reduced as you're collecting the survivor benefit instead of collecting zero, which is what normally happens. So good question. I'm glad we got to tackle this one.
Alrighty, perfect. Okay, let's jump into some other topics. There's one thing I wish I talked about this last week. I totally forgot. So it's kind of a week old, so a day late and a dollar short. But I never Googled, Chris, you might want to Google this. I never Googled to see if this was true or if this email was making a joke, but I have never heard of this. It came from Wealth Council. Y'all know I geek out on estate planning. I don't talk about estate planning a lot on the show. I mean, we do about trust and beneficiaries of IRAs and things of that nature, obviously. And the reason is I don't feel comfortable in my level of knowledge. I think it's higher than the vast majority of advisors out there. But I pursue it more as a hobby than as a line of business. So I may not be correct in everything I say. So I don't chat about it much. Hence, one of the reasons we want to get an estate planning attorney on the show. That said, Chris, I can't join Wealth Council because I'm not an estate planning attorney, but they kind of, I don't know if they think I'm an attorney, but I kind of semi-joined in the sense of, hey, I'm not a member, but yeah, I'd like to receive your emails. And there's a lot of activities they do, a lot of online seminars and in-person conferences that you can go to as a non-member. So that's why I get their emails. I got an email from them last Tuesday that claims that last Tuesday, I don't know what that date was, I don't have my calendar in front of me, but last Tuesday was Be Kind to Lawyers Day. I just laughed when I saw that. There's literally a Be Kind to Lawyers Day. And according to Wealth Council, it was, let me pull up a calendar and I'll tell you the exact day.
Looks like it was April 9th, International Be Kind to, it's not just Be Kind to Lawyers, it's International Be Kind to Lawyers Day.
Oh, they didn't say that. And in honor of that, they were offering me 3 free months if I would join Wealth Council, which again, I can't because I'm not an estate planning attorney. But I just smiled at that. There is a Be Kind to Lawyers Day, folks. Never heard of that before. And it's April 9th. So I hope everybody on April 9th did not crack any lawyer jokes, because you're supposed to be kind to lawyers. Okay. Couple of other things. This is more of a PSA, but somebody wanted to share with us from last week's EDU. Was it the last week or the week before? I think it was when Paul was on talking about taxes. He wanted to pass on a little FYI to share with everybody. He said, longtime listener, here is an FYI to share. He says, if you do decide to, I live in the city where Elvis lived, Memphis, Tennessee. So anyways, I answered it for you all. He says, last December, this is in regards to the EDU show we did, Chris, with Paul on the wash sale rule. He said, last December, just so you know, I exchanged my Vanguard short-term bond index fund for the Vanguard short-term investment grade mutual fund. I did it to tax loss harvest. But immediately after doing it, I worried I erred because of the wash sale rule. These are both short-term bond funds managed by Vanguard. Surprisingly, Vanguard never flagged it as a wash sale. Mm-hmm. So to make sure, I called them. And the phone rep said, since one was an index fund and the other a mutual fund, to them, that was sufficient difference.
Yep.
So I just wanted to share that. Interesting. Again, the IRS never defined it. So it's really up to your opinion or the custodian's opinion. Mm-hmm. And the opinion of Vanguard, one's an index ETF, one's a mutual fund, not the same.
Yep.
So anyways, I thought that was interesting. So thank you, listener, for sharing that with our listeners, if you will. Okay, this is another PSA that I was very, very thankful for this. So somebody shared, you remember we always talk about the Harvard study that shows what, Chris?
Shows that the kind of peak on average of people's financial acuity, mental acuity, we'll say, the part of your brain that handles number crunching, peaks at about 53 years old and then declines at a rate specific to you over time. It grew to that peak as you were younger and aged and et cetera, but then it starts heading downward after that point.
Exactly. And this forms a big base of our philosophy. And we'll be going over it in the EDU shows that are upcoming. Y'all know that. And a lot of you VGers, we try to get you to understand. Many of you have a lot of financial knowledge, at least right now. But it doesn't mean that knowledge will continue for the rest of your life. And a Harvard study that I reference all the time, which, gosh, has got to be over 12, 13, 14 years ago now that I referenced it. And I used to have the study. And after getting this email, I'm trying to find it again. And I'm sure it's somewhere on my computer. But the Harvard study did find that people generally, and there's always it's like a bell curve. So there's always going to be the left and the right tail ends where some people, the decline will happen a lot sooner and some people it'll never happen in. But for the majority of us, it's around age 53. It's slow. It's not a cliff, thankfully, because we'd have a really dumb show right now because both Chris and I are over 53. But it's just saying the part of your brain that understands financial concepts begins to decline. And it's one reason that even for people with ample assets, so there's no doubt you could cover your minimum dignity floor shortage between your Social Security and pension if you have one, you could easily cover that shortage for the rest of your life through withdrawals from your assets. It's still a reason why we strongly recommend you consider, not you as a 60-year-old today, but in the future, let the 70, 75, 78, 80-year-old you make the decision. But it's one reason why the older you may want to buy an income annuity to cover the shortage when the shortage really starts manifesting itself. Longtime listeners know we call this the crossover point. That initially for many people, not all, but many, when your full Social Security is turned on, especially when there is a couple and the two spouses have very large Social Securities, or one has a very large and the other has a spousal benefit off of the very large. Usually in those situations, when their Social Security is fully turned on at first, the projections, the trends indicate that their Social Security will cover their MDF, food, utilities, transportation, housing, and healthcare expenses until a crossover point, which generally happens between 78 and 83. We've talked about this before. But one reason we still tell those people who could clearly cover it with withdrawals, you might want to consider, not now, it's the older you will decide. And one reason why the older you may actually decide to buy an income annuity, even though they have enough money, is its simplicity, its automation, it's easy, it's fully guaranteed, and it helps protect them from the fact that their interest in finances is diminishing and their cognitive understanding of finances is diminishing. But as Chris always points out, what isn't diminishing?
your confidence in your ability to make these decisions, which sets you up for a precarious situation when faced with financial complexities.
And that came from a Texas Tech study. Mm-hmm. So where am I going with all this? I thank this doctor for sending me this email. He wrote to us, Chris. Dear Jim and Chris, I love the show. And I wanted to write to give special recognition to a professor and former dean of business from my alma mater, State University of New York at Buffalo. He is responsible for the work on financial literacy peaking well before retirement age that you so often mention on your show. His name is Dr. Louis Mandel, or Lou. He was a prolific author and economist and an award-winning educator and recognized founder of the field of financial literacy. And he wrote a book titled, What to Do When I Get Stupid, A Radically Safe Approach to a Difficult Financial Era. I will take a summary of the book from his website, and he posted it, and it's available on Amazon. Here's the brief summary this doctor shared with me. What to Do When I Get Stupid documents the age-related decline in the ability to make financial decisions, which begins, on average, at age 53. It tells readers what they can and must do while they are still compos mentis so that their plan cannot be undone by others or by themselves. I love that. Dr. Lou Mandel died in 2019. He is well recognized with an endowment fund of economics at the University of Texas at Austin, where two of my children have graduated. There is an interview with him from several years ago where he shares similar retirement planning strategies that are common on your show and process, such as positioning and utilizing guaranteed streams of income to support the essentials that he calls them, or what you call minimum dignity floor. You can see this on YouTube. Now, he includes a link to YouTube. Would this, if I sent this to Jacob, can a YouTube video be posted in the show notes, Paul? Oh, jeez.
A link.
Pete.
A link to it.
Chris. Huh?
A link to it can.
Okay. So I'm going to forward this email to Jacob in our office and ask him to post this link to this doctor's YouTube video in our show notes. So this physician who wrote says, as he summarizes, anyway, I wanted to send this to you to give a shout out to Dr. Lou Mandel, and maybe you can recognize him on your podcast instead of always referring to his body of work as a quote-unquote Harvard study. This floored me because this is the author, I guess, of that study, I would imagine, or at least the basis of that study, and I didn't. No, I had that study, and I wish I could still find it, because I'm sure this gentleman would have been mentioned in it. Mm-hmm. And this physician says, I know you and Chris may already be familiar with Dr. Mandel, but I thought I would mention it for your listeners. No, I was familiar with his study. I did download it, because for years I jokingly said it was the only academic study that I tried to read. I found the executive summary to be written in English and the body to be written in something called academic English, which I didn't quite understand. But the executive summary and the conclusion, they write in a different language or a different person writes them. But the actual study is written in what I jokingly refer to as academic English. But this is amazing, Chris. I'm going to read this gentleman's book, and I'm going to watch the video. And I encourage other people to do the same. And this kind of leads into our annuity question of the week. Hi, Jim and Chris. I am a longtime listener here. Thank you for a very educational, entertaining podcast. My wife is against any kind of annuity, or for that matter, any insurance products, even for the guaranteed income. Can you provide alternatives you would use to replace an annuity in your retirement approach? I look forward to your answer. Now, he sent this to us quite a while ago, in 22, actually almost 2 years ago, exactly to the day, March 28th of 2022. So about 2 years ago, almost like 2 years and a month ago. The reason I say this kind of ties in, listener, I think you have to talk to your wife about what Dr. Mandel is saying. Maybe get the book. Maybe let her listen to that little brief summary of the book that the doctor who sent this email to me referenced. Get your wife to understand. There's going to come a time in her life she's likely not going to understand this. And as Dr. Mandel wrote in his introduction to the book, recognizing and taking proactive steps to protect you from others or yourself is crucially important. And it's one reason I so passionately believe in protecting your minimum dignity floor with lifetime guaranteed income. It's for every reason. Yes, not the what got me going on this was the 78-year-old woman I bought strawberries for in my early 30s. You all know this story. And if you don't, you'll hear it again in another week or two on the EDU show. But it's not just so you can afford strawberries. It's to keep you from falling victim to financial fraud. It's to keep you someday, if you don't die, death is easy. Living and being non-compromentos. Did I say that right, Chris?
Sure.
Oh, did I or didn't I?
Yes, you said it right.
Thank you. I did? Thank you. Well, just say that next time.
Well, I don't know if you're using it correctly, but you said it right.
No, it means you don't quite understand what you're doing. Non-compromentos, right? Help me out here before I'm featured in Dr. Mandel's book as being what you don't want to be.
I don't think he's going to revise the book now. He was gone in 2019.
True. Anyways, I don't know if I used the right saying or not, folks, but what I'm getting at is the annuity can help you when you can't help yourself. And yes, someone can still fraudulently get your money, but if the annuity payments and the pension payments and the Social Security payments are being made into an account and automatically your bills are being paid from that account, and I can only imagine in another 10, 15, 20, 25 years how automated all of this will be, even more so than it is today, it's harder to steal that. And what if nobody's trying to steal, but they're not into this? They can't manage your portfolio and cover everything. That's why we passionately believe. That's why I passionately believe in this. I see it with my own family as they age. They don't understand finances. And I know I too will be like that. I jokingly tell Jacob all the time he will be my financial planner as I get old. But I'm telling you, folks, unless Jacob gets out of this career or goes to work for another company, because my company will be going long after Chris and I have stopped working, he probably will be helping me, but not with withdrawals, but at least monitoring what's going on, because I will have annuities and whatever Social Security I'll be entitled to, which isn't much, to cover my minimum dignity floor, because I know I won't be as knowledgeable as I am now. And yeah, we can all laugh at how I forget names and have difficulty pronouncing words. That's just the way I've always been. But I know someday I might not even know what color socks I have on. And that is when I'm going to need help. So get your wife to understand there are times where risk pooling, and which is what an annuity is, and the benefits of hopefully a top-rated, and we'll talk more in June, that I cringe on private equity-owned, Bermuda-based, or Cayman Island-based insurance companies handling lifetime income streams. But a top-rated A++ company based in America paying a steady stream of income, I don't cringe on that. So your wife needs to understand, and I was amazed when he wrote she's against any insurance. Does she not have health insurance? Does she not have homeowners insurance? Does she not have auto insurance or boat insurance if she has a boat? Disability insurance if she's worried about that? But the big three, homeowners, health, and auto, you're telling me she doesn't have those? Why would she not want to also ensure longevity and cognitive decline? Because that's what a single premium immediate annuity can help you with. Now to your basic question, is there anything that we would recommend instead of an annuity? Well, an asset manager, he would or she would probably be shouting to the top of their lungs. A bond ladder.
Yeah, I was going to say a treasury bond ladder.
And we talked openly about a gentleman who I admire greatly, but I've never met, even though he lives in South Denver. Someday maybe I'll bump into him. Named Alan Roth, a big believer in TIPS bond ladders. But Alan, his brain, I can tell you, is at a level that I would only envy. And not everybody's going to have his knowledge to put a bond ladder in place, even though it's allegedly fairly simple with a lot of websites you can go to now. But it's something that cannot simply be put on autopilot and should be monitored. And what happens when cognitive decline sets in and someone's going to step in? What if it's your spouse stepping in and they're just as old as you?
And you'll have to dedicate more money to the bond ladder for an equal amount of income, because with bonds you'd get no mortality credits. Now, true, and the anti-annuity people out there will be yelling, yes, but if you die early, you still have bonds of value that go to someone. True, but what is your goal here? You're trying to have longevity protection. What's the most efficient way to do so? It's hard to argue with the efficiency of a straightforward lifetime income stream from an annuity, but you could, he asked for alternatives, and I think that the bond ladder is the most logical next step there, but the complexity and the management and the fact that you have to throw more money at it to accomplish the same amount of income is to be considered.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because bond ladder's correct, but... you never will say a name. There's an important thing you missed there, Chris, and I'm surprised because we just saw this in the office. And that is this. Chris is right. If you buy an income annuity, single premium immediate annuity, unlike a bond ladder, and Chris is right, there are people, usually asset managers, who want to take 1% or more of your wealth to put a bond ladder in place. And in defense of Alan Roth, he hates AUM as much as I do. He charges a fee, not an AUM. I'm giving him a shout out, but that's from what I know about him. However, most investment advisors are going to charge you a percentage of your assets to manage a bond ladder, which amazes me, because even the yield on that might be, especially with TIPS, is only going to be about 2, 3, 4%. And if they're taking 1%, my God, they're taking a third to a half of your earnings of interest to manage a bond ladder for you. They're expensive. But Chris said, an asset manager is going to be shouting, if you die early before getting all your money back, at least you have a bond ladder in place that a beneficiary can inherit. We recently ran a SPIA quote. We always plan as a team. You all know that. That's a passion of mine. My staff knows that. And every Tuesday, we plan as a team. And Chris, we were working on a client case where we had to get a lifetime SPIA quote. And I said, as Chris was in the software, their ages seem to be matching in my head, Chris, their longevity. I bet you a return, a cash refund, SPIA, will pay as much as this non-cash refund SPIA you just ran. Chris, what happened when you did what I told you to do?
In that particular case, they were about the same.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. What did I just say in English? When you buy a single premium immediate annuity, it is the verb, folks, no longer the noun. The noun is just an annuity. When you annuitize and give an insurance company a boatload of money, they are going to say, you can't get this money anymore. Instead, you're going to get a lifetime stream of income, whether you live 1 month or 30 years or 40 years or 50 years. We will continue to pay you until you drop dead. Okay. However, if your age kind of matches up with a longevity factor, if you're buying in your 90s, it doesn't work. Put it in English, if you're buying it in your 50s or 60s, especially late 50s, mid 60s, this might work perfectly. Where you could say to the insurance company, I want as much mortality credits as I can possibly get. Give me a single life annuity. And if I die before getting all my money back, share all my remaining money with other people in this annuity pool. That's called mortality sharing or risk pooling. The money you get, if you die early, everybody else in the pool gets your money. That's called a mortality credit. But if you're at the right age and it works, putting on what is called a cash refund, which normally, if you are in your 70s and 80s, will result in significantly less income to you. A cash refund says, hey, I don't want to share. I'm selfish. And I also fear that, God forbid, I die and my money goes to someone else. I'm not going to share. I want it to go to my beneficiary. Well, if you're not going to share your money as a mortality credit, you don't get mortality credits. So dollar for dollar, you get less money if you don't share. However, if the numbers work, the cash refund and the age for this particular person we ran the quote for was nearly identical. I think it was $6 difference, and I could be wrong on that. It was nearly immaterial. So they could put a cash refund on that SPIA and really not cause them anything different than if they had a non-cash refund. That's why I told staff who don't quite understand annuities like I do, always run both quotes, cash refund, non-cash refund, because sometimes the numbers just work where it's a no-brainer. We can remove the risk most clients have of, God forbid, I die tomorrow because I get hit by a bus and I just put $300,000 into this annuity. My beneficiaries get nothing. So I don't want to share. Okay, great. But let's look at it both ways. And in this particular case, the cash refund, do you remember, Chris, if it was just $6 difference? I can't remember.
I don't remember that. But it was very close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was minimal. And obviously, our recommendation was go with the cash refund.
Yeah, and those chances increase in an environment where interest rates are higher, because in all cases, these refund features of the annuities, you give up the earnings on any money. You know, the money that they're earning on your money as you've put that premium in there is never yours to get back in a cash refund. You're only getting the original amount you put in. You're not getting the original amount plus something. So when interest rates are higher, they're making more on the back end. So the cash refund option is actually less expensive for them to offer, and things align like this. In the low interest rate environments of a couple years ago, we would see fewer instances, much fewer, when I would run quotes. And that's the explanation, you know, for why that is back then. So the planets align differently depending on what's going on in the economy, interest rates, your age, etc. And so yeah, there's certainly more complexity, less guarantees, possibly a chance of more money left behind with the bond ladder technique, but boy, it's hard to beat the simplicity, straightforward situation, automatic deposits into your account. You don't have to worry about reinvesting coupon payments. You don't have to worry about management of anything. It's just done for you, and you get all the glory of the mortality credits. I understand that his spouse is insurance averse, but I'm probably guessing that's out of not understanding or having somebody tell you a story one time of a bad experience with an insurance company, and they've just now painted the whole industry with a broad brush of negativity. And not that there aren't bad things that go on in the insurance industry, and people sold inappropriate products and some products that I wouldn't sell to my worst enemy out there, but with proper research and understanding what's going on, I think if you embrace this idea of the simplicity of lifetime income stream when you didn't have it as a pension, I mean, it's just think on the, you know, maybe describe it to your wife as, hey, we're buying a personal pension. We're having some other entity guarantee us a lifetime income stream. We can't get it from a pension because we didn't work in a job for that, but we can buy one from an insurance company. It's the same thing as getting a pension. So another way to think about it.
What you should also do, because I love where Chris is going with this, but add what we just shared with you about a case we were just working on. What if you could show your spouse that with the cash refund option, it's nearly identical to the single life where the money, she might be worried about this, Chris, also because I don't want to lose my money. I die the next day, you know, it's gone. What if you could show your spouse, and what if all you annuity doubters could actually see if the numbers are working for you and you're at the right age with the right interest rate and so on and so forth, where it's the cash refund is there. The only quote-unquote cost now is the opportunity cost. But if you knew, I'm just making this number up, I had to give $300,000 to an insurance company to get a lifetime stream of income that's going to help support my minimum dignity floor. And if I die, I'm going to get all $300,000, well, not all, I'll get the $300,000 back less any money that I've already received. So you're not going to lose anything. It's almost free. The only cost is the opportunity cost of what you could have earned on those dollars or lost on those dollars during the period from when you bought the annuity to when you died too soon. But if you live long enough and get all your money back, now the insurance company has to keep paying. So to me, that kind of eliminates some of the biggest fear of people buying an annuity is, well, if I die, the insurance company wins. I always cringe on that, folks, because the insurance company's not winning. The other people in the insurance pool are winning. You're risk pooling. So unfortunately, there's nothing else that I know of that will offer lifetime stream of guaranteed income short of, as Alan Roth points out, a TIPS ladder guaranteed by essentially the United States government. But it's much more complex. I would run a quote with a cash refund and a quote without the cash refund, see if the numbers look as good as they recently did. And that might make it more palatable to your wife and to all you naysayers out there. Now you might start to think, holy moly, this is kind of, I don't want to say a no-brainer because there's really no no-brainer. You got to think this through. But makes the annuities look a lot better, doesn't it, folks? Where the only cost now is the opportunity cost. Anyways, yep. we beat that horse to death. Yep. I need to move on because I got things to do. So we're going to wrap up the show here.
Perfect. Yeah, I was about to say the same thing. It's about time to wind her down. So thanks for bringing all those to our attention. I'm thinking you, since you're the one who gathered them or brought to the show today. Nice mixture of stuff today. Glad we got an Irma question back because people were complaining we didn't have any Irmas recently. So send in your Irma questions. If you want to send in your own question to the show, just send it to Jim directly. Jim at jimhelps.com is the email. That's jimhelps.com. And in the subject line, put it's a question for the podcast and put a word or two about the topic. That makes it easier for Jim to find when he's trying to pull questions of a certain topic. And you do have a chance to have your question answered right away if it gets picked as the question of the week. Might never get answered. We can't answer every single question, but if you've got a nice, clean question that's focused, and send it in to Jim. Good chance some point we'll be able to cover it. So we really appreciate everybody sending in those questions and everybody continuing to listen. Jim, you have a nice weekend. I'm going to do the same and get my mowing work done. Maybe even this evening, get it done.
Can enjoy, you know, my Chris, Saturday. I will say, since you are going to be mowing, mm-hmm. if by chance you had so much fun and want the fun to continue, feel free to come to my house and mow my grass. I don't want to deprive you of this fun.
I'll see how I feel after I mow.
All right. Just throwing it out there. And anyone else listening, if you want to have fun mowing, come to my house and mow. I will let you have the fun.
Great. Well, thanks for that. Have a great weekend. We'll be back with everybody else next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's jimhelps.com or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.